Broadcasting from InnieUpMagazine.com and 620 WDAE AM, the sports animal in Tampa Bay, Florida.
With your hosts, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's time to Ante Up. It's December 5th, 2008, and you're listening to the best poker podcast on the internet.
Stopping by a sit-and-go on a snowy evening. Whose chips these are, I think I know. He's playing loose with careless show. I'll sit and catch some flops around here and fill my pockets up with dough. My tiny stack strikes little fear. Compared to his, it's nowhere near. And yet he's bound to lose it all because he only has one gear. I'm going to have to play it tight. To get the chips, I think I might. The other players' stacks all crash. Their dreams now felted out of sight. The tempt to push, to be so brash. But I have plans I cannot trash. And levels to go before I cash. And levels to go before I cash. Ta-da!
Wow! Man, I miss that.
Well, I want to thank Anteup National, Matt Million Ayres, for that poem that he sent in, and it's a tremendous poem. It's a takeoff on the Robert Frost poem, Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening, which many of us probably had to learn in high school or middle school. Not you, Chris, but
no.
Those of us.
My remedial reading in school was basically TV Guide and the phone book.
Well, so you guys have finally made the big time. I'm happy to be back on.
Man, yes, we missed it. It's been a long time. This is actually the first time you're on the show since we actually made the leap. The other show that you were on, we were actually with Ante Up. We still taped at the time. So it's good to have you on the show. It's kind of weird having you as a phone guest. It's like the other way around now. You should be having surgery or something to call in like I did. That's what it feels like.
Well, I've still got that bum gallbladder I've got to get taken care of one of these days. But
and for our new listeners, we should probably introduce who the hell this is. It is Mike the Bard Fasso.
Yeah, also known as Fatso, Pesto.
Lance.
The Sicilian with the attitude.
I'm also known as the tightest player on earth.
And now you've added a new nickname, Banana Holder, and we'll hope that to stick with card references there. But congratulations, Mike. You knew that the business was struggling, and we couldn't afford to pay the postage, so you came through for us. You know, we asked Full Tilt, could you make sure one of the three of us wins the event, because we can't afford to mail the plastic produce. So thank you very much.
Scott's lovely wife delivered the banana to my workplace, and
she was ecstatic about doing so too.
And I must say, I was impressed with the banana because I thought it was going to be one of these cheapo, entirely yellow things that you see. But this actually had texture and color. It was really a piece of work.
Only the best for you and the Ante Up Nation, Mike.
And banana pudding all around to all my friends.
So Mike was the champion of Apes Event 11.
It was, you know what, Mike, and I tell you what, I mean this from the heart, genuine, I was extremely happy for you. And I told Scott, too, even while he was playing in the event, I said, man, I hope Fasso takes this down. And he goes, WTF! you know what I mean. I would love to see Fasso finally win one of these things, because he always goes deep, always makes the final table, and you know, just one bad turn, a card, or whatever here or there could have been all different. So, tell us how it went. What was your tournament like?
Well, it seems to happen to me whenever I cash deep in something like one of these multi tables. There's very rarely is there one gigantic hand, but there's a lot of little small decisions along the way, and I think that was true here. I think I played my usual very conservative game, but at the same time, I tried to mix it up here and there. For example, when we were getting down to shorthanded two or three tables, there was a player on the button at my table who was constantly raising, and running over the blinds, of which I was one in this position. And, you know, I kind of let him do it. I did like the Helmuth type thing where I just let people run over me.
Yeah.
But then I made a stand with a hand that was not really a hand. It was just, I think it was like Jack Deuce or something.
Right.
And when he raised out of the small blind, I re-raised his bet times three. And the big blind folded, and he folded. But it was just, I wanted to make sure that they understood that, yes, I'm going to be playing conservative, but I'm not going to be a pushover. And so that happened. That was a key hand, I think, that established some table respect, that people just couldn't run over me, because at those levels, you really need to watch the blinds escalate, and you need to make sure you don't let your stack get too low. The big hand that I had to get me into the money was a hand which didn't go to showdown, but I'll tell you what it is. I was under the gun. I think we were probably seven-handed, and I had jacks, and I made the standard raise, and it was repopped about two to my left. And this is the kind of thing where before, you know, I might have just shoved or something, but I'm so tired of this shove and pray type thing.
Yeah.
So I decided to take the cautious approach, and I just called. The flop came out jack high. I checked. The re-raiser made his bet. And at that point, I decided to go ahead and push, because we were at a position where there really wasn't a point in re-raising him, I just decided to push. And he thought about it for a long time. I suspect he probably had ace-king. And with the bet that he had put out on his continuation, that got me a healthy enough stack to ride my way into the final. But the other thing I did, not that I'm anyone to give lessons on poker, but I did the C-bet pretty regularly. But then I also would sometimes check the flop after I had made the initial raise. And if the guy checked behind me, then I could lead out on the turn, pretty certain that he was going to go away.
Yeah.
And that happened a couple times. Another time, I called a raise out of the blinds with like a marginal hand, like a king jack suited or something. And the flop came out like eight high. And I figured, well, it's not likely that this guy connected with that flop, so I'll just go ahead and lead out here.
Right.
Well, in this case, when I let out, he raised me. So, you know, I didn't continue. I just let it go. But I tried to mix it up a little bit like that. And I think the biggest hand of the tournament for me was one. I think if people were watching this, I guess, Scott, you may have been watching this, they may have been astonished at how tight I was playing right at the end, because I
can't.
No,
no one's
ever
astonished about how tight you play, Mike.
I again had jacks, and I again raised in early position, and we were down to like five-handed or four-handed at this point. Somebody shoved behind me, and I had him just barely covered. And I thought about it and thought about it, and I finally said, you know, four-handed jacks, I don't think that's something that I'm going to fold. But at least I found that I was going through a thinking process with every hand rather than just reflexively shoving.
Yeah.
And when I called the bet, it was the greatest feeling in the world when the opponent turned over two fours. And so that was pretty much it. And then lastly, I think, and I didn't know the player that I was heads up with. I'd never seen him before. But I think my experience with heads up really came into play because, and this is nothing against that player, but I just decided to run over him heads up. I was raising every button just about, and he was either just flat calling his button or folding, and so I decided to go ahead and take it to another gear and just run over him. And then I got lucky about the seventh or eighth hand, and I flopped two pair with a junk hand, and he caught part of it, and that was the end. So
man, lights out. Literally, because it was pretty darn late.
So you've won your share of sit and goes and cashed in big tournaments, but this is probably one of your first actual tournament wins where it was multi-table and a pretty decent field. How did it feel when it was all over? I mean, I know you get to hold this over our heads for the rest of our lives, but other than that, how did that feel?
Well, I won't be able to hold it over Scott's head because I'm sure he's going to win one of these days.
No!
But yes, I will be able to hold it over your head for the rest of your life.
Yeah, definitely.
And no, it was great. I did. I had a cash a few years ago, I guess now, for $950. I finished second in a horse tournament,
right.
And that was nice, but. This, I think, tops that because, and this is another reason I think I did well in this tournament, and this is a tribute to the people who enter these tournaments for apes. They're all good players, and there's not as much craziness in the apes tournaments.
Yeah.
Everybody's a pretty solid player. I mean, I'm not saying everybody's great. I know I'm not, but there's a certain etiquette involved in playing in a certain patterns that people do, and there's not a lot of wild people just shoving with nothing and crazy plays, and at least I didn't see any of that at my tables. So when you know that you're playing with good players, you can, you know, make better decisions because the decisions are easier to make than when you're playing against a bunch of wild cards.
Yeah, very true.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I started out with every intention of being patient. And
that lasted about 5 minutes.
You know, and I folded so many hands to re-raises, and my raises weren't crap. I mean, they were legitimate raises with legitimate hands.
Right.
But I folded so many re-raises, or the flop would come, and I would have ace-king, and I would make my continuation bet, and someone would shove, and I couldn't do anything. And by the time anything happened, I had, like, no stack. So Madison Jewelers sits down next to us, and he's an advertiser in a magazine, and he's on my left. And it's like the first hand, and I have like ace-jack, and I raise, and he calls my raise, and we're in late position. So I think he was in a blind, or he was right behind me on the button, but it was pretty late position. And the flop comes jack high, but all clubs.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, all right, I'm going to bet out here and try to keep him from four-flushing on me. I bet out, he calls, and the turn's an ace, and it's not a club. So I'm like, okay, well, now I can represent the ace, and if not, I had king-jack or ace-jack, I can't remember. But anyway, I wanted to represent whatever turn, too. And I shoved, and he already had the flush. He had flopped a flush, which is 1%, you know, 1% that he did that. So
right.
I'm like, there's no way I thought he had a flush there, and he trapped me. And I was out. But I had folded so many hands playing so patiently that when that happened, I was like, you know what? It just figures. I haven't played a hand all day. And the guy, 1% chance of him to flop a flush with two suited cards, and he does, and I'm out. So I was like, you know, whatever. So I went and played cash games, won $12 there, and said, screw it. I made my money.
But, you know, I thought of something about, not that that's a bad beat, but there really isn't such a thing as a bad beat. And this is one of those things, I guess it's kind of like a fortune cookie type situation that it just occurred to me, that people talk about bad beats. And you know what a bad beat is? Really, the only thing that is a bad beat is if you have a better hand than your opponent at the showdown, and your opponent wins the pot. That is a bad beat. Now, anything other than that is not a bad beat. If you have a bad beat story that you want to tell me, if it falls into that first category, I'll be happy to listen. Otherwise, shove it, all right?
Oh, man, we got Confucius on the show.
But, yeah, I felt my inner Helmuth during that tournament, and people were content to run over me for as long as they could, and I woke up with a hand and punished them.
All right, well, you've got a lot of momentum going into the final Apes.
The main event, horse.
I'll be there. I have a potential issue with that. There's not going to be any power on at my house for that week.
Oh, my God.
So I'm going to have to find a Wi-Fi spot, but I will be there.
Wow, economy's tough over there in St. Pete Beach now.
Yeah, times are tough all over.
All right, but if you can make it, it's 9 p.m. Eastern on December 18th on Full Tilt. The password is anti-up. It is a 24-plus-2 double-stack horse tournament. You can win a tournament token to get in for much, much less than that.
I got mine with those player points, those $600.1. That's how I got mine.
Well, I need to sign up for that soon because if I don't, I will most certainly piss away all of my winnings from the other tournament. I need to lock into that tournament right away.
Yeah, you and me both, buddy. I always do that. Whenever I make a deposit, I sign up for I always beg Scott, just put the whole year's worth of tournaments up so I can sign up for them so I won't lose my money and have to beg somebody to give me some cash.
Hey, that reminds me. Has our good friend Gambit updated the Player of the Year standings for this last tournament? And where do I stand?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not sure.
Yeah, he asked me for the tournament summary because he's had a tough, tough week at work, and I am assuming that by the time people listen to it now, it will be updated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where do you think you stand, Mike? You think you're top five?
I was 10th going in to this tournament. So I don't know. Maybe I moved up to like 4th or 5th. I don't know.
Wow. If you win the horse tournament, man, you are player of the year.
Well, that's a lot of pressure. Don't take it easy there, big guy.
Hey, when are you going to get the Wednesday night home game going again?
I will do it as soon as I
get power back on.
Get the power back on. And the other thing, speaking of home games, this was a funny story, and you were there maybe, or maybe you had busted out. You tend to do that a lot lately, but at the home
Not
game.
Me, I've never busted out.
Oh, okay. Or you're on your third rebuy?
Oh, my God.
But anyway, you remember, Scott, this is so typical of Scott. This is why this guy has friends, because he's so silly and dumb. It's almost adorable. All right, get this. We're talking about the home game, and we're sitting at a home game, and we're saying, you know, I said to Scott, I saw you guys' article on the home games, and, you know, there's some good stuff about the dangers and blah, 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 and not getting hijacked or whatever. And so he says, yeah, you know, if anybody ever busts in here, I'm going to collect up all these chips and run out the back door. And I said, you know, Scott, you go ahead and take the chips. I'm going to go over to that pile of cash over there. I'm going to take that and leave. Scott gets his game hijacked. He runs out the back door with a bunch of chips. Let me ask you, Scott, where are you going to cash those chips? Anyway, that is just a typical long moment. I mean, that is so typical of
Scott.
Yeah,
the epitome of our home game right there. I was there for that. You know, I don't mind you saying stuff that's true on the show, like you're going to hold it over my head forever because I'm never going to win a banana. I have not busted out our home game like in a year. So just relax.
Yeah, I was just giving you a little bit of a ribbing there.
Yeah, we miss you, Confucius.
Well, right,
we know you got to get back to work, so really appreciate you calling in, and we'll see you at the home game.
Good thing. See you all later, guys.
Thanks, man. Take it easy.
Care. Bye.
Man, good to have the Bard back on the show.
Back, and he had a poem from Millionaires, and
we've been holding that poem. We've held that poem probably 8 months.
Exactly. See, and right. It paid off. Man. We knew there was going to be a triumphant return.
Man.
Now, it's probably fair to say, with the affection that the Antiup Nation has for Mike Faso, that he could be considered the people's champion of apes.
Yes.
And but you had the opportunity to meet another person known as the people's champion.
Yeah.
And probably more well-known than Faso, though Faso is probably coming up in the world now.
Yep. I got to interview Gavin Smith. And everyone knows my contention with Gavin Smith. I've interviewed him 3 or 4 times. Most of the time he was, getting busted out of a tournament, probably every time. And I hung out with him at a party once. And on Poker Road, he said that he never heard of us, never heard of the show. So I wanted to get to the bottom of that.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, here's what happened beforehand. And I'm so glad that this happened to me, because every time we do a show, we get on here, you come on and you're like, oh, I got this funny story. And it was hysterical. And I'm just sitting there. Uh-huh. Yep. Doing the fake laugh thing. Because I never have a story, you know, because I'm so busy doing the magazine while you're out meeting all these people doing stuff.
Yeah.
Finally, something happens to me. I'm there at One Eye Jack's down in Sarasota with our good friend Sam Minatello. And we're having lunch. My wife and I are having lunch. Theo Tran was there on hand, and he busted out on the main event. So he came in, they introduced me to him, and I was going to interview him. But then Gavin had also busted out at the same time. So Gavin comes in, and they knew I wanted to interview him because he's our cover story this month. So he comes over, he's got this plastic cup in his hand, and he's got what looks to be like a Virgin Madras drink in there or something. I don't know what it is. It's just some ugly puke-colored beverage. And he puts it down on the table, and he starts shuffling the cards and fooling around, and he says, well, you know what? Guess what? I taped this interview. So I have it. So let's listen to what he said. And you know what else, too? I also combined the little inquisition about Annie up there. So it's all in one clip. So let's listen to this.
No, I drank it. I'm kidding. I don't drink. I'm kidding. I didn't drink it.
Jerk.
Take half of this one.
Dude, I didn't know you didn't want me to drink it. Last question. On a recent episode of Poker Road, they talked about the Bluff Reader's Choice Awards.
Okay.
And then you were quoted as saying that you had never heard of Annie Up. Is that true?
Well, it's funny because I know that I've been on it, and I've heard of it, but I didn't know the f***ing name of it.
Okay. Because that was me, and we had met like 3 or 4 times, yeah. And I'm talking on our show saying, how does he not know who we are? We've met and talked and interviewed and been on the show.
I'm
and...
a f***ing basket case. Yeah, that's why. Isn't that obvious?
So you think your show's going to win, or you think our show's going to win this year?
If they go on what the best show is, then obviously we'll win. But, you know, maybe you guys got a lot of people voting for you. I don't fucking know. I didn't even know that you had these fucking awards for you until they started telling me about it on the show.
Okay, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, man.
I tell you, the first question my wife asked is, oh, my God, what kind of shot did he do? And it turns out you really have no idea.
I have no clue. It could have been poison. He could have been handing me rat poison. Apparently, I'm a rat bastard. So,
oh man,
he was swearing and he was so mad at me. And I was like, dude, I'm trying to cover it up, saying I didn't know I wasn't supposed to drink it. You know, make it the girl mad at me or whatever. Nope. He was, but then after that, he answered all my questions. And he was just joking around, but he did not want to drink that drink. So, you know, I guess he's apparently trying to cut back on the drinking. And if you read our interview in the magazine coming out in about a week or so, 2 weeks, our cover story for January, he talks a little bit about the drinking prop bet, where he stands on drinking now, and what it's like to be the people's champion. He got that moniker from Minatello one night when they were out, well, drinking. So the other cool thing, too, was when I was down there, I got a phone call on my cell phone, so I excused myself from whoever I was talking to, started talking to the person, hung up. About 10 minutes later, this guy walks up to me and he says, hey, are you with Annie Up? And I said, yeah. He said, oh, my name's Dan. I'm from Tallahassee. I recognized your voice. I listened to your show. I said, you recognize my voice? It was like the coolest thing ever. I mean, you know, my photo's on the website, I guess, and in the magazine. But he listens to the show only, and he makes a lot of trips over. He said he makes trips over to, like, Bo, I guess, and you know, because he's up in Tallahassee. And he said he listens to us on those trips and stuff. And he was sitting with Theo Tran at the table, and he asked me, he saw me take a picture of them for the magazine. So he said, can you mail that to me? So I sent him a photo. So I'm, you know, helping out the Andy Up Nation any way I can.
Yeah, there you go.
But he recognized my voice. That was like the coolest thing ever. Unbelievable. I felt so good. You know, it's so weird. I think I talked about this before when I was at Foxwoods, and like somebody who knew I was going to be there comes up to me and says, hey, and are you Chris? And I'm like, yeah. It's so weird when someone recognizes you and you don't know who they are. It's a scary feeling. You know, they could pull like a 45 or something and blow you away. I didn't like what you said about whatever and then blow you away. So that's pretty scary. But I wasn't the only one playing poker that day, or at least doing something in a poker room that day.
Yes, that's true. I headed out to Tampa Greyhound Track. A good room over there. They run really good tournaments. John Kane's the tournament director over there. Does a good job. Yeah. And so I played in... 15,000 guarantee, or $15,000 guaranteed, as you like to call it.
I like to call it guaranteed.
Yeah, I don't really know why the D is there, but anyhow,
somebody's guaranteed.
I was playing in that, and I don't have any funny ha-ha stories, like throwing back
wicked
shots. You
have ironically funny stories.
But two interesting situations arose.
They aroused you?
Arose.
I don't want to sit next to you in the next home game, man. Put me a couple of seats away if interesting situations at the poker table arouse you. I want to sit across from you far, far away.
Oh, but I know the Andy Up Nation loves to weigh in on these kind of things because they probably have these kind of things happen in their own poker room and wonder what they would do or whether what happened was correct then. So I'm gonna pose two to you, Chris, here.
Oh, great.
And the entire Andy Up Nation and see what they say.
As long as it doesn't involve ethics or legality. I'll feel comfortable answering this question.
I do not believe any of these are written into law anywhere, so
okay, good.
It will be an ethical delay.
Let's see what you got.
All right, so the first situation, we were down to about, 30 players left, top 10, I think, cash in this tournament.
Okay.
And there was a bet, a raise, and then a short stack moves all in.
Okay.
All right? Both of the other players call. Okay, so we have an all-in player and a three-handed going to a flop.
Okay,
right?
Okay.
It's a queen-high flop. One of the remaining players that's not all-in yet bets out, all right?
All right.
Now, the other guy kind of shakes his head, like, what are you doing? You're betting in
to a dry pot
with an all-in player
near the bubble, right?
That, you know, it's not really close to the bubble, but at that point, it was kind of a critical moment because the blinds are so high.
Right.
And finally, the guy decides just to fold. which usually happens in this case.
Right.
And so the hands are turned over, and the guy that bet out paired the queen on the board. All right. Mm-hmm. The all-in player had pocket sixes, so he's drawing really thin here. And he goes runner, runner to river a flush.
Wow.
To stay in the tournament. And then it turns out, by reading Idiot Magazine, this guy ended up chopping in the top three spots. So this is how lucky that guy was running that
right.
day. So then the player that folded in this hand gets irate. And because he had the ace of diamonds and would have won this hand and knocked the player out, and said, you just don't do that. What do you think about that?
Well, again, this gets back to the under the kind of collusion understood thought process between players where you have someone all in, you check it down, but not at this point. There's way too many people left in this tournament. You know, if it was, we're on the money here and we can get into the money and then move on.
Yeah, right.
But if there were 30 players left and they paid 10, this guy had every right to bet out. And, you know, because you don't know the other guy. The guy could have had, you know, jacks, you know, and liked his hand. And you're there to make money and to make chips. You're not there to oblige some guy to river a flush and you lose the pot. You know, it was a miracle the guy with the sixes, he thought he had the best hand. You know, and usually, too, when someone bets out like that, they bet out to tell him, I've got the hand. I've got the best hand.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't like he was bluffing there.
Yeah, I totally agree with the guy who bet out, and I disagree with the guy who started the argument. I mean, I can understand it, and everyone probably in that situation, because it's happening to them at that time, would moan and say, you know, what the hell? I mean, we were checking this. But you're that far away. At what point? Here I go again.
Exactly. Maybe that's a better question.
At
what
point do you say, okay, now the understood collusion checkdown is in effect? You know, flip the switch for the understood collusion check. You know, so no. I mean, if it's closer to the bubble and it looks like we're all going to get into the money and it's not that big of a pot, yeah, check it down maybe. But even then, you still don't have to. And it's not ethical. This isn't ethics. If anything, it's unethical. The check down is unethical.
You know, I think the more I thought about this, because I've seen this online too, there's a couple times where I'm on the guy that's upset kind of fence here in a tournament, because I always want to get people out, because that's my game, is to get people out. I'm not really a chip accumulator.
Right.
If you have a piece of it, and I believe it was top at this point, so that's a pretty good piece against a you know, random all-in hand, then I think I'm fine with it no matter where we are.
Yeah.
It's when you have like that flush draw or something and you're betting to get the other guy out, that's where I get a little ticked off about it.
Yeah, I think that this guy had every right to bet out with top pair and 20 players left till the money. There's a lot of play left, and you know, again, at what point do you say, okay, well, 50 players now, we got to go check down when someone goes all in? I mean, that's ridiculous. So, you know, it's the same thing with the whole get up and leave with your money ethical question. You know, at what point can you tell me it's okay to leave the table? Same thing here.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing I didn't mention this, too, is the player who folded was a very aggressive player. He had been raising a lot of pots, pushing a lot of pushing all in a lot of pots. So you factor that in, then now all of a sudden, now this guy has a real hand against him and makes that bet, not necessarily assuming that the player is going to fold, but more likely assuming that he's going to get called and get more chips out of it.
Yeah.
So you factor that in, and then all of a sudden, it's all right.
Okay, so what's your second scenario?
All right, here's the second scenario. We were much, much closer to the money now. I ended up going out, when did I call you? I think I went out 15th in this.
Oh.
So pretty close to the bubble. I can't really call myself a bubble boy.
You were bubble perimeter.
Bubblicious. but this was probably a couple hands before that. There was a very tight player sitting in C10. And when I say tight player, tighter than Faso, tighter than me.
Oh.
So you can imagine this woman... she might have played two hands the entire tournament.
That sounds like it's Dan Harrington's wife. Wow, that's tight.
All right, so she's in C10, and she moves all in, all right?
Okay.
I'm in the small blind. The big blind to my left jokes when she pushes all in, oh, boy, you know, I better have if I don't have aces or kings, I'm folding this hand. All right, and everybody's like, oh, laughs. So it folds around. At this point, blinds are pretty heavy, so, you know, an all-in gets some respect. I fold. Now it's up to the big blind, who has not yet looked at his hand, and the dealer looks at him and says, I'm sorry, sir, your hand is dead. You have to fold.
Mm.
And he was like, what? He's like, yeah, I'm sorry, verbal is binding. You said that you were going to fold your hand.
Yeah, that's not right.
You don't like it? All right, well, they called the floor over, and the floor said, yeah, I'm sorry, verbal is binding. You have not looked at your hand. He said, now, if he made that decision before the woman had pushed all in, that changes the action. And therefore, he would be able to change his decision. But since he did it after she pushed all in,
yeah. But he did he say I'm folding unless? If he said that, then that's the Well, the action is unfolding on less.
And here is the thing. He had pocket queens.
You got to be kidding me.
Isn't that a great story?
That is unbelievable. That is unbelievable. I'm not sure I necessarily agree with that ruling.
Well,
especially when, you know, it's not your turn to act, you're out of turn, and you haven't looked at, you haven't said, I fold. You said, I am folding unless.
That was part of the discussion, was the fact that he had not looked at his hand yet. But, you know, he ended up being very cool with it, because he said that he probably would have still folded, though we all kind of laughed. Because he thought that this player was so tight that she had aces or kings or ace-king, and he didn't want to go up with any one of those three hands with queens. But the debate later on, I mean, the discussion later on, I shouldn't say debate, because I think everybody kind of accepted the ruling, but I think the discussion later was, just keep your mouth shut when you're in the hand.
Yeah.
You know, you could be Shucky Green after the hand, but when you're in the middle of the hand, keep the jokes to a minimum, because... Yeah, your hand could be a peril.
Did you say Shucky Green?
Shucky Green.
Cause it's Shucky. Because Shucky, like you shuck like corn on the cob, but Shucky Green is the funny guy.
Well, here's the thing. When we used to go to Vegas when I was a kid, my dad used to take me there. Well, we couldn't afford those big name.
So you saw Shucky?
Yeah, so
you
we went Shucky? To the El Cortez and saw Shucky Green.
He sat on stage and made popcorn for everyone. So the long-awaited 60 Minutes / Washington Post combined report.
Right. We'll get a little more serious here now. No more joking around.
On the UB absolute cheating scandal, finally aired November 30th.
Yep.
And Scott, do you recall in the 80s a little old lady who was part of a huge promotional campaign for the food chain Wendy's?
Absolutely. Clara Petter, right?
Yeah, and they picked,
Petty?
They picked up the roll, the bun, and then she looks in and she goes, "Where's the beef?"
It certainly is a big bun.
It's a very big bun.
Big fluffy bun.
It's a very big fluffy bun.
Where's the beef?
You know, and you know how much I love those commercials?
How much?
That was back when I had the Betamax, all right, not even the VHS, the Betamax.
The Betamax.
With the official 1984 LA Olympics logo on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And the remote actually had a cord.
That's right. It couldn't be remote.
I pulled it back to the couch, I actually ripped it out of the machine.
Yes.
But we taped that on the good old VHS tape, and a lot of our listeners, I mean, a beta tape, a lot of the listeners probably have no idea what the VCR is these days.
But,
and then we played it on slow-mo as the big button came off, and that was the... that's how we passed the time in the long household growing up.
I remember there's one of the commercials where she's in the back seat and the driver's taking two sharper turns and they're going back and forth and she's like, "Where's the beef? Where's the beef?
Where's the beef?"
I mean, for the longest time, that was like everyone's catchphrase, you know? Well, that's exactly what I thought when I watched the actual segment on 60 Minutes. I thought, there is nothing new here, really. Where's the beef? This is 60 Minutes. This is the Washington Post. Where is the hard journalism? Okay, so you showed up at all the places where everyone else already showed up, Nate Arum and all the other guys. They're all there already, and they already got all this stuff. And anybody who can work the internet could have found everything they already said. They built it up, and there was nothing to it.
Yeah.
Even the thing about Russ Hamilton. We all know about that already.
Yeah.
Okay, so, all right, here's the thing. Now it's mainstream. Now everyone who doesn't play poker knows about the cheating scandals, and perhaps Congress will now see this, watch this, step in and say, look, we're losing all this money, let's regulate it, make millions of dollars, blah, blah, blah. And maybe that will happen, and maybe all these other rooms will come back now and have legitimate poker sites, and we'll all be able to play poker online without worrying about the feds coming in and knocking on our door. But really, though, could you at least give us one more nugget instead of interviewing Dan Druff?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean...
Where's the beef?
Well, I was talking to a former coworker at the Times today about it, because he asked me what I thought about it. You're right. I mean, it was really weak, I thought.
Where's the beef?
Now, here's the thing. I'm not trying to defend 60 Minutes here, but I think it's a way too complicated story to do on television. I think even if 60 Minutes devoted the entire 60 Minutes, you know, kicked Andy Rooney off, I still think we still would have said the same thing. I don't think they could have really got to the heart of this matter, even in 44 minutes plus commercials.
And you're probably right. But
and have it as one of three or four segments, if you count the old man.
I was very disappointed.
Really could not do much.
I was very disappointed because even with 60 Minutes, they usually come to some sort of conclusion. They usually do it right. And that's their thing, is if they can't do it right, they don't do it at all. I mean, a lot of their stories takes years in the making.
Well, and this one, I think I heard, I don't know whether it's for true, but there's some rumors that they kept delaying this to do extra reporting on it. And if that is true, I don't know what they were doing other than... the other thing I told my friend today, too, is, boy, they blew the 60 Minutes budget on travel, man. They flew
Canada.
Down to Costa Rica to get Rica. B-roll of that little thing, and then they flew up to Canada and get a B-roll of that thing. And it seemed like a lot of money for something that I think the average person out there, let me back up. Poker players like us know everything that we saw on there and know much more about it.
Right.
So we weren't going to learn anything. The average viewer out there that really had not heard of this, I think it's far too complicated of an issue to... I don't think those people really understand what exactly the story was after watching it now,
and
either,
then,
other than just the soundbite of, oh, online poker's bad.
Well, here's the thing, too.
Yeah,
it's that
I know where you're going.
They all said... they started right away saying that online poker in America is illegal.
Yep.
And that is like... Now, for 60 Minutes on the Washington Post to not get that right... They better do some sort of retraction this Sunday, because that's just unacceptable to me as a journalist and watching career journalists come through with something like that. They could have taken, 12 more seconds and one less shot of Todd Wattelis and said, no, what really is illegal, and even that is iffy,
instead
of what they said. And now, because all it does is scares every single American who watched that thing, who doesn't play poker, doesn't understand it. I had like six people call me, mostly family members.
Yeah.
Did you see that thing on 60 Minutes? Did you see that? Oh my God. Even one of my best friends from back home called me. He's like, hey, you know, I didn't know what you guys are doing was illegal. I'm like, it's not.
You know,
and that just makes it worse. Now they're just spreading more crap.
But you know, the first one was internet poker's illegal. Then they came back later on and said internet gambling is illegal.
Yeah.
And as weird as this sounds, that was even more wrong than the internet poker, because
all the carve-outs.
Because I mean, you can bet on horse racing online. There's nothing wrong with that,
right? Unbelievable.
So that was irresponsible. You know, and I went back and I read the entire Washington Post story. I thought, you know, I always have a chip on my shoulder because I grew up being a print journalist, and I never really had much respect for TV journalists because I don't think they have enough time to really do this kind of story.
Right.
So I'm like, well, maybe the Washington Post did a better job. They did do a better job, I think. Obviously, he had much more room as a two-part series, and they had some other doodads in there.
Right.
But again, it was a lot of space that didn't really say anything.
Where's the beat?
I know.
Or I shouldn't say that. That's wrong. It didn't say enough. I think there's a lot of things that they could have got into and cut a lot of the other stuff out, and it would have been a much better expose, but at least a story, an issue piece, and
you know, I can just envision if you were the editor, the Wire editor or whatever for the Washington Post, and you know, the 60 Minutes are like, come on, we want to air this segment, and they're like, nah, Scott Long's still reading it. He's still not happy with it. You know, we'd see it sometime in July after all the new regs are already out or something, you know. But one newspaper didn't let us down, and that was Steve Rosenblum. Now, he's not our good friend.
Not yet.
Because you like to say that.
Yeah.
But he's promoting this, so he's our good friend for now. He's a Chicago Tribune columnist who often writes about poker.
Only mainstream journalists out there are writing about poker regularly.
Yeah. He wrote a column this week asking Obama to repeal the UIGEA.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what he said. He said, I want our poker player-elect to obliterate the unworkable Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act, which was deviously attached to the Safe Port Act in 2006 and hastily rushed to finalization last week by the lame duck Bush administration. He called for regulation, too. He said, regulate it, tax it, reap millions. Government-backed lotteries, which prey on the stupid, why should people playing a game of skill such as poker get the criminal treatment? He talked to Poker News Daily, and he told them, he said, what Bill Frist did was despicable.
Mm-hmm.
There was no way that the Safeport Act would not have passed. All the stuff we already know.
Exactly.
He said it was very short-sighted and denying an opportunity for our country, which needs money and has financial problems, to regulate it and license it and tax it and make the money. And we all know this as listeners of our show and as us, you know, and in business. But really, now the common person is going to see this and say, oh, okay. And what's best about it is he's in Chicago, which is where Obama always is. Yeah. And Chicago's going to, and he's going to see this. Obama's going to see this. And it may not happen this year, but it may happen soon. And I think that this was, and I think the Trib, you know, is huge newspaper, obviously. And it'll have a huge, I think it'll have a huge impact.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I mean, it's nice to see, rather than just talking about poker, that he's becoming a little more of an activist, because you have that ability when you're a columnist, and certainly a respected paper and a respected journalist. The other thing about the 60 Minutes that I just really hated, I'm not upset at them for trying to tackle a story, even though I knew they would not do a good job with it, just based on what we know.
Where's the beat?
But you're right, it's a scare factor out there, though, and it's putting weird things in people's minds. And really, the big story in all this, and this is what I was talking to with our former colleague today, is you really need the legalization and the regulation to make this right. And even then, doesn't guarantee that what happened at Ultimate Bet or Absolute or any other sites that's going on doing now, that it's not going to keep happening. But the real advantage to regulation is it brings in different operators,
yeah,
that are, I don't want to say more trustworthy, but have much more to lose by running games that right. are illegal. I mean, think, for example, and I started thinking about this in my walk this morning. Once internet gambling or internet poker is legalized, we get to that point and regulated, it's not just going to be PokerStars and Full Tilt and the companies that we know. They're still going to have a huge footprint, obviously. But now you're bringing in, like, Harrah's or MGM Mirage or Adelson's company from the Venetian. All these casino operators are now probably, at that point, going to jump in on this.
Yep.
And now you've got a better framework for a reliable game. And that, in turn, will make these ones that are based elsewhere. We don't know who owns them and, you know, where you can prosecute them. They, by competition, are going to have to firm up whatever weaknesses they have.
That's an excellent point.
But, you know, none of that was in the 60 Minutes. And it just, the Washington Post just kind of barely get into it.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, is that once it does become legal and regulated, there will be a lot more watchdogs, too. It'll be in the states. People will be able to visit it regularly. The feds will visit the places regularly and, you know, just like they do with the casinos now and everything. So it's just a smarter thing to do. If you don't want your constituents being cheated, then do something about it. But don't take it away from everyone in the country. All right, well, I hear the hotline ringing, I love this hotline, because every time someone calls in to make fun of me, it's like the Force. There's always, you know, if there's two Jedi, then there's always two dark Siths. It's the balance of the Force. So when someone comes in and calls the hotline and makes fun of me, well, the Donkey Gear hotline kicks back. 813-448-1120. You call that phone number and we use your clip. We'll send you something from Donkey Gear. And let's listen to the clip first.
Hey, guys. It's Boomer in New Orleans. You're sitting here watching the Monday Night Football game between the Packers and this. Oh, God. New Orleans just scored. Oh, that's tough. Anyway, I wanted to call in and thank you all for the Poker Whiz Wheel and been taking my hand for hand of the week there. God. New Orleans just scored again. Ooh, that's a tough break, Scott. Anyway, the Poker Whiz Wheel is really great. It's really opened up my hand rate. Oh, my. Ooh, what a bad interception by Aaron Rodgers. Oh, man. Anyway, the Poker Whiz Wheel, it's really great. It's opened up my hand range. It's really teaching me. Oh, New Orleans just scored again. Wow. Oh, this is getting embarrassing. Poker Whiz Wheel, great. Opened my range. Really, New Orleans scored. Anyway, I'm running out of my minute, and I just wanted to let you know that it's a great tool. Everybody ought to have one. And New Orleans just scored again. Thank you, guys.
Oh, it was brutal. It was. I felt so bad for you.
Yeah. You know, I flew all the way to New Orleans to cheer on my team, and not only did I just do this kind of what happened look the entire second half, then I had to endure the merciless taunts of the who dat Saint fans on the way out of the game. And mind you, these are taunts by a last place team. All right. Let's not forget that.
Aren't you a last place team? Oh, no, because of Detroit.
No. Thank God for Detroit.
Yeah, that's right.
So we're getting taunted by a last place team. and then I get home and I open up my email and
Yeah.
Good stuff like this.
So thank you for calling in. And you know what? What I want you to tell him what shirt he's getting, because this is great.
Yes. This week's DonkeyGear.net shirt for our winner is a Donkey Xing. It has a big yellow sign with a donkey there.
Yeah.
It's a donkey crossing.
Cool.
For those people that can't really figure out where we're going with that. Boomer, send us your address, and I will do my best to not transpose the zip code by accident so you the shirt arrives in Louisiana in one piece.
And don't pack any explosive devices in it, okay?
And be sure to go to donkeygear.net for all kinds of things besides t-shirts. They got tables and glasses and all kinds of other cool stuff there.
Yep.
Check it out at donkeygear.net.
And they're located in Orlando here. They're one of our local guys. So it's pretty cool. So, you know, you went to New Orleans. Did you play?
I did. I went to Harrah's. I like that room. I played two sessions there and took a little more than 230 out of that.
Sweet.
Not bad for 3-6. 3-6 and then 4-8. Finally, here's the thing, is they got that great half-and-half game I think I talked about on the show before.
Did you put that in your coffee?
Yeah. A little half-and-half. A little sweet and low and
half-and-half.
And cream, yeah. No. No, but they have a 4-8 half Hold'em, half Omaha game that they spread there. It's pretty popular.
Right.
A lot of players actually play it there. I wouldn't say for their living, but they do that to build up a bankroll to move up because they also have a 10-20. Half and half that gets going every once in a while.
Man.
But so I get there the first day, and I'm playing at the 3-6 while I'm waiting for a seat to open up. Chris, I was there for 4 hours that first day. An hour and a half, I was topped on the list to move to a 4-8 game. Never got there.
Hmm.
I thought those people were going to, like, die there. I thought people were going to be the coroner to come in to drag those people over to the table.
Hmm.
So I went back the second day and finally got in at the end and won a couple big bucks.
Ask me if I feel bad for you. Do you remember my Foxwoods trip?
Yeah.
Okay. Well. And they were like, oh, slip the brush, $20. Yeah.
Yeah.
That ain't going to help.
But at least you had the odd juice there.
The odd juice. Oh, man.
The second annual WPT APL Poker Cruise is sailing aboard a Carnival Fun Ship en route to Nassau, Bahamas, February 26th to March 1st. Prices start at $311 plus $100 buy-in to the main tournament. Call Mary Kolb at 727-733-3498 for details.
The new and improved Antiup store is now open, just in time for all those holiday wish lists. With markups just 10% above Cafe Press's base prices, stock up today on Antiup shirts, hats, gifts, and more, and all of Antiup's logos. Go to antiupmagazine.com, click on Shop tab, and order today. Send us a photo of you wearing the Antiup colors, and you just might find yourself in Antiup magazine.
You know, Scott, one of the cool things about running a magazine is that I get to talk to all these famous poker players.
That's right.
You know, I talked to Gavin O'Kay this week, and last month we ran a little Q&A with Antonio. But nothing is funnier than actually hearing the interview. You know, reading it, you can interpret it any way you want, but hearing what he has to say. It was pretty funny, and so anyway, I interrupted him at his home in his underwear, and he spent a little time with me. So let's play that interview for him, and hope you enjoy it.
What's up, bud? I'm here. I'm all yours. You got me for 10 minutes. How can I be of service?
Okay, excellent. Someone told me, and I can't reveal my sources, but someone once told me that the real reason you changed your name from Amir to Anthony and then later to Antonio was to improve your chances with the ladies. Is that true?
That is not true. When I was younger in school, I got picked on a lot. And I just wanted to have a more American name where, you know, I wouldn't get needled so much.
Okay.
Then when I went from Anthony to Antonio, it's because Antonio was more mystical. Antonio the magician versus Anthony the magician, because I used to do magic for a living.
Right, exactly. Do you ever miss those days as a professional magician at all?
No, I don't say I'm a professional anymore. I still do magic for friends and family and, you know, groups of people and whatnot, but... you know, for the most part, I'm a poker degenerate.
Did you learn any lessons from the hard work you put in as a magician and translate those into being a poker player?
That's a good question. No specific skills, but, you know, I did magic for so many people.
Uh-huh.
I learned human traits. I learned the way humans react when they get excited, when they're confused, when they don't know how something is done. So I think, in essence, I learned just natural human behavior from doing magic and seeing the reactions that I got.
Okay.
That might have helped with my ability to read people later on down the line in poker.
Excellent.
So no specific, like, you know, because of cards or something did my poker ability go up.
Okay.
But because of human trait and seeing how people react, I think I learned a lot. And I spent, like, 12 hours a day, every day for 2 years practicing. I kid you not. Like, morning to night, I was practicing.
Oh, I totally believe it. A lot of people who've seen you on TV know you like to have a good time. What's your favorite place to hang out and party these days?
Tao Nightclub in Las Vegas.
Yeah. What's so great about it?
Well, it's just fun. Like, there's an area in the middle of the club which is like a catwalk kind of a thing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like right in the middle of the club. It's like right by all the big like the VIP tables, VIP section. And I'm friends with the owner of the club, and no guys are allowed to dance up there. It's just all girls. It's like from the moment the club starts to the end of the night, there's like 20 girls going through there all the time. And since I'm friends with the owner and whatever, I can go up there and, like, I have my bottle of Patron in my hand. I'm, like, drifting around, talking, dancing, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like, no, there's no other guy allowed up there. So I kind of feel like, you know, doesn't hurt the matters when you're the only guy allowed up there. I don't want that to come off in, like, a chachi way. You know,
yeah,
like,
right.
Just the way I get treated because my friend owns a club. Yeah. And also, you know, it also depends on the night of the week. Like, I love the Bank nightclub at the Bellagio.
Okay.
Those Bank and Tower, both my favorite spots.
Okay.
Just depends on the night. I mean, if you want to give me the rundown of every night, you know?
No, that's cool. I just didn't, you know, I know you're, especially, like, you know, you think of the show I Bet You and how much fun you have with Phil on there. And just curious about what makes you have a good time, you know, rather than just, you know, taking taking some money off of him. And speaking of that, too, how did that show get started with you guys?
Literally, like, Phil and I, we used to play poker all the time, and some guy was like, dude, you guys are hilarious together. Like, you guys have a TV show where you walk around and bet on everything. And we're like, yeah, cool, make it happen, you know? So the guy, like, I don't even remember who it was, but somehow it got transferred to our agent. Our agent got a hold of this production company. Next thing you know, they have this idea for us. We go to New York, do this little, like, one-hour pilot walking around making bets. 8 months later, they sell the show to a network, and somehow you have I Bet You. We couldn't believe that it actually happened, you know, because these things, people are always like, oh, yeah, this, you should, oh, we have this idea, but nothing ever actually happens.
I've seen a lot of the episodes. They're hilarious. And I hear now it's in limbo, but if they ever approached you to do a season three, would you do it?
We're filming it right now.
Well, okay. I actually called the Mojo, and I talked to some of the people there, and they said that it wasn't, that it was in limbo. So you are definitely filming it.
Oh, we've already shot 4 episodes, and we're shooting another one in about a week and a half. We made a bet, like a month ago, on who is more full of, I don't know how to explain this, but you know how Phil and I are always BSing each other
and
whatnot. Yeah. So we're sitting there, and I'm like, you're full of shit. He goes, no, you're full of shit. And we make a bet on who's more full of shit, and we went and got a colon cleaning.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So that'll be, I think, the funniest episode that we've ever made when it comes out.
How sick do you feel when you lose a bet to him, or even a pot to him?
It hurts. It really hurts things. Phil and I are so competitive. Outside of our show, at the poker table, just in life in general, we just want to beat each other so bad. It's the most insane, twisted friendship you've ever seen.
Is there ever a fine line where you would just be like, all right, this is just an amount that I would feel really bad that I took it off of Phil this time?
Nope. If I broke the first net worth, I would text message him like, life is good, you know? There's no sympathy.
Okay.
When my net worth was $30,000,
okay,
he offered me a flip for like $35,000 to $30,000 because he wanted to break me and sent me back to zero. I mean, that's how sick we are.
That is so sick. Oh, well, I guess I brought up Phil then. Have you gotten over the fact that he's still with Gentilly and met her? And
he left me. It hurts. But you know what? They're in love, and I'm happy for them. In the end, you want your friends to be happy. As much as I get less time with them because of Jennifer and whatnot, they're very happy together, and that's all that matters.
Okay. So what's the sickest prop bet you ever made?
I mean, I'd have to say we made a bet on who's more full of shit. You know, we made a bet on who's got more potent sperm. I mean, those are pretty sick bets.
Those are pretty sick. Okay, how much cash do you have on you right now?
Like, literally with me on my body?
Yeah, like on you right now.
Zero.
Okay, so does that mean you don't always have to be ready for an action bet like that? You know, you just...
Well, I mean, I'm at home in my underwear.
Oh, okay. I thought you were out.
I have access to friggin', you know, a lot.
Okay.
In the next 30 seconds.
All right, so let's move on to the WPT. I know that your people call you, like, the poster boy or the spokesperson, and what are your feelings about the tour right now, the state of the tour, and what they're doing?
Well, I mean, the World Poker Tour is, you know, the company that revolutionized poker.
Yeah.
And, you know, certain things have happened in the poker world. The law got passed, the internet law, that didn't help matters and whatnot. World Poker Tour is, you know, they still have the biggest tournaments in America by far.
Right.
Their show is now on FSN. They have Club WPT, where you can go and play for $19.95 a month and play all these tournaments. And, you know, went up to, like, they give away about $100,000 in cash and prizes every month. So, you know, I love the WPT. I mean, I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for Sleepless Come WPT. So right. I owe everything to them.
So you brought up the Club WPT. Now, what about, I saw you on that, the Loop show, whatever that was. And you also talked about the MySpace venture. What's that all about?
Well, MySpace and WPT have joined forces and resources to create, like, the ultimate poker hub.
Okay.
And through that hub, you can basically get anything and everything you need related to poker news, tips from the pros, live updates. You can play, you can, you know, blog, you can chat with players from all around the world, everything. You can do whatever you want, basically.
And you play on there, too?
Yeah, of course. Oh. I play at Club WPT. Well, I mean, it's like a link to clubwpt.com. I play on clubwpt.com.
Okay. How much time do you have to dedicate to that?
A few hours a week.
That's cool. And I'm sure people must just flock to your table when you're on there.
It doesn't hurt being mean.
Well, okay. Well, you've been a celebrity for a long time, and you're probably used to it now, but I'm just curious, what kind of goes through your head when, you know, you're flipping through the channels and poker's on TV and boom, there you are, you know, doing your wave thing in front of Helmuth or, you know, Hollywooding it up on High Stakes or something like that. What goes through your mind when you see yourself on television?
That's a very good question, and I'll be honest with you. When it first started happening, when I first started being on television, it was the coolest thing in the world. Yeah. I would want to watch and, like, see what happened and this and that. And after a while, and I don't mean to sound this in the least unappreciative way, but, you know, in life you always want what you can't have. And once you have a certain level of anything, you desire less.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a great answer.
And not to say that I'm famous by any means, because I don't consider myself a celebrity on any level. I mean, maybe I'm known in the poker world a little bit. You know, I get recognized a few times when I go out, but by no means would I call myself a celebrity. Maybe in the poker universe, yeah. But that's a small universe. So nowadays, if I see myself on TV, it's not really, like, it's cool, don't get me wrong, but it's not like, oh my God, I'm on TV.
What's the deal with the bad beat stories? How did that start with you not ever telling one?
Well, I just have a certain philosophy on life in general, okay. And that is that if something bad happens and there's nothing you can do about it, why let it stress yourself out? Why let it get to you? Why let it bring you down? I mean, life is too short. So I don't let anything affect me. You know, a bad beat happens and you lose with the best hand. Well, what can you do? Like, you're just going to sit there and mope about it and cry about it and tell people? That's just negative energy. You're not going to get your money back by, you know, crying about it.
That's true.
The fact that you can shower in the morning and eat when you're hungry crushes the fact that you just got a bad beat, because life is not a bad beat if you can do those things.
Do you still have a prop bet going about that for never telling someone?
Yeah, I had a bet with a guy, and he's down like 2,000 to me.
Okay.
3 years later, he forgot and told me a bad beat story, and it was pure because he forgot that he had told me that. He forgot that we had made that bet.
Okay, last question. You know, all we know about you really is what we see and hear on television, but is there one thing that people would be surprised to know about you?
Yeah, I'm extremely family-oriented, very close to my father, my mother, and my brother. And, you know, one of these days I'm going to throw in my player card and find a wife and have babies.
Excellent.
It's not just a dealer button. It's more than a tournament timer. It's Pro Dealer Button, and it's a synchronized poker game management system. The buttons talk to each other, so every table in your home game is on the same page at all times. Pre-order yours today at ProDealerButtons.com. Use the code ANTYUP05 and save 5% on your order. Become a well-rounded rounder. Register today for the ANTYUP Horse Course, coming to Sarasota Kennel Club on Saturday, January 31st. For just $249, get winning strategies for Raz, Omaha 8, Stud, and Stud 8, plus an $85 tournament voucher, lunch, a gift bag, and much, much more. Register today at ANTYUPMagazine.com, and we'll teach you how to win in Sarasota.
This is Joe Seabock, and you're listening to ANTYUP.
Today's Hand of the Week brought to you by the good folks at GreatPokerHands.com and its great Texas Hold'em strategy cards. Correct the single biggest mistake made by Texas Hold'em players. Order today at GreatPokerHands.com and use that code ANTI for 20% off your order.
Excellent.
Chris, today's winner is Jerry from Bentonville, Arkansas.
I know Jerry.
He is right down the street from Walmart, I am sure, because everybody in Bentonville is right down the street from Walmart.
Jerry goes by Loser 64 or something like that, right? Or Loser 24 or something. I've played with Jerry before. Not just in Apes, but like on cash games and stuff. He's coming in and taking a few dollars from me, I think. So I'm going to enjoy critiquing his hand.
All right. Well, this is a heads-up hand at the end of a tournament.
Hmm.
We don't normally go this route.
No.
But we'll see whether we can make it interesting here.
Okay, I'll write everything down.
We'll give you a little bit of a backstory quickly. It was the last hand of the tournament. And so 411 hands in this tournament.
Wow.
You know, I don't really count my hands when I'm in a tournament.
Oh, I do.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. I got an abacus right next to my computer. Mark them all down. I think in Apes I moved three of the beads. That was about it.
All right. So anyhow, there were 411 little
abacus
beads on the abacus here.
Yeah.
Our hero here, Loser, said he spent the majority of the tournament short stacked and caught cards with 15 players left. He believes that he played with a player that we are heads up with now, since 27 players were left.
Okay, so he had a little bit of history.
Yeah, for online, that's almost a lot of history, actually, right?
Yeah, yeah.
When we were three-handed, he says, they were passing chips around all three of us, and we had taken turns being chip leader and short stacked, and then he knocked out the third player when he caught cards three hands in a row. Very nice run.
Yep.
All right, so heads up, our hero here is 3-1, a dog in chips, so he decided to push or bet every hand until he took the lead.
Okay.
Probably a good approach. I mean, you're down
3-1. Yeah, I mean, at that point, yeah.
Got to get lucky, right?
Yep.
So he said he rebuilt his stack through the pure aggression, but now he was trying to be more careful, folded if he showed any strength. So kind of changing gears a little bit.
Sure, because now he's got some money.
All right. So he says, with all that said, does his opponent's play make sense in this hand? All right.
All right, here we go.
So here we go. And
we're off.
For a little more excitement, he did not put the hole cards at the beginning of the hand. We will reveal them at the end
of the hand. So we don't know what he has?
No.
Oh, come on.
Where's the beat?
Or which point am I?
Do you want one of them? Which cards or do you want the other one?
I want our cards.
You want your cards?
Because I got to play from his point of view. I got to know what's going on. What am I? I got to know.
Okay. All right. Our hero has 203,000 in chips.
Okay.
The villain has just 66,000 left now.
Okay.
It's funny to think of just 66,000 in chips being short stacked. So our hero's M is 19.96.
Like I care.
Round it up.
Okay, whatever.
And our hero is on the button with ace of diamonds, deuce of diamonds.
Okay.
All right, now the fact that you badgered me into telling you his cards gives me an opportunity to look at the Great Poker Hands card.
Well, I'm glad you did.
And find out that it's a dubious holding, even with two players.
Even heads up,
that
it's dubious?
That seems surprising.
Wow, I'm shocked. Yeah, I'm shocked.
It's the 48th best hand.
Any ace is pretty good heads up that they
I would think. The and book, suited the book makes says all that. The difference.
See, the book
it
says
it
that.
Four or five times better, know, right?
The cards may not say that, but the book says that. So it just depends on what you're looking at. But I've heard ace, deuce. What did you say?
Ace, deuce, suited.
No, before. Okay. You made a joke. I couldn't hear you.
Oh.
I was so concentrated on what I was going to say.
Suited makes it four or five times better.
Okay.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah, what's it like, 2-3%? No, but really, any ace, really, unless the guy's got a pair, I mean, you're probably ahead.
You know? Yeah, or he has an ace, that's better.
Yeah, but I mean, unless it's a pair. I mean,
right. Okay. Know. And you're on the button, too. So.
Yeah, we got total control.
That's great.
Okay, so what are you doing? What are the blinds, too? Because I know what the M is, but I really don't have my abacus here now.
Yeah, exactly.
So I can't figure out what the M is.
Blinds, it's a 3,000, 6,000 with a 600 ante.
Okay.
All right. You got everything written down there? You ready to go?
I wrote it down. I'm ready to go.
All right, what are you going to do here?
Oh, I'm raising.
Well, we know that.
Let's see. So there's already 10,200 in the pots. And I'll raise 20 grand.
20 grand.
I'll make it 20K to go.
All right. So
it's a third of his stack. So if he wants to commit, he's going to have to really think about shoving.
Yeah,
so,
it's a 20 grand bet there. He's going to either shove right away or fold, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
I'm making it 20K to go. And if this guy...
And if he shoves, you're comfortable.
He shoves, I'm gonna say, hey, you know what? If I double him up, he has 120 and I have 140.
Say,
I'm still in
dance.
The
lead. Let's go.
Let's dance, baby. I've been playing with you for an hour and a half. I know how you play. I'm not worried about you. No, I think I would definitely raise. I would probably make it about 20K.
All right. Well, hero min raises to 12 grand.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a Dan Harrington thing. So
yeah. See, I kind of like this heads
I don't mind
up,
that.
And he's slowed down too. He has been hyper aggressive early on, and now he's changed gears. So
changed gears, Scott, right? And he's now the other opponent is comfortable knowing that he's tightening up. Then a raise would indicate even more power. So I would definitely raise. I wouldn't make it.
Well, he's raising.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I would. I don't know if I maybe 2.5-3 times instead of. I made it like a little more than 3 times because of the antes too. But I don't mind the min raise. I guess that's. But you know, the guy's getting the right odds to call with that. So any two cards could still beat you.
All right, let's switch around to our villain here. A call here would be roughly a tenth of a stack.
So Yeah, that's I would definitely speculate if I don't have to call 10% of my stack off. I'd speculate heads up.
Okay. All right.
Wouldn't?
No, I'm just thinking at this point now I start to get a little more cautious and be very selective on the hand. So
I'm getting more than 2-to-1 on my money.
You know, at this point, I sometimes will fold to a min-raise if I don't like my hand. Whereas otherwise, I would almost call with any two cards.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible for me to say what would I do as the other guy without knowing the cards. So,
right.
But I know that any two cards really, or unless it's like deuce 7 or, you know, 4-9, I'm probably speculating and calling with any reasonable holding.
All right, so knowing that then, our hero min-raising, he knows that he's going to get called here.
Oh, he
and
may.
You like that because...
He may. Yeah, I mean, I guess you want to act. That's why I wouldn't min-raise, though. It depends on the kind of player you are, too. I mean, Dan Harrington says you want action with your good hands, which is why you're only min-raising, you know, making it 2x or whatever. So, when your head's up.
Right.
So, maybe that's his thinking, is that I can outplay this guy, or I know I'm going to have a stronger holding, and his may be more dubious. So, you know, you're either going to get him to fold or get him to call. If he shoves, then you're getting away with a cheaper price, because you could probably fold there. If you wanted to, since you only min raised, but if you made it like 20 grand, you'd have to call. So I don't know. There's positives to both ways of playing it, but I don't know. Let's move on because it's taking way too long before we even got a flop.
Well,
here.
It's a heads up hand.
Oh
here.
My
it's
God.
Not gonna be very hard. All right, here goes the flop. Pot is 25,200. Flop is 9 of spades, 6 of diamonds, 7 of diamonds.
Oh yeah,
yeah. We love this, right?
We love that.
I mean, we didn't pair anything, but we got the nut flush draw, and
yeah, we're not going anywhere. For the guy's only got 50 grand left, or whatever, 60. 60. So, yeah. All right. So, obviously, this guy checks to us, right?
Yeah, the villain checks to us.
Yeah. So, I would bet about 15, 12, 15. Yeah. What the hell? And I would, if he shoves, no matter what
he
bets.
Yeah, this part, we're willing to.
We're getting more than 2-to-1.
Exactly. We were almost ready to go all in pre-flop anyhow. So, now that we've got, you know, a gazillion outs here.
Yeah.
Including our ace could be live,
Ace could be live, too. So
and the deuce could be live, too.
Yeah,
could be
up against the pick. You could have 3-6. You could have, 12 outs twice, pretty easily here.
Okay.
I'm betting about 12 to 15 or so, maybe.
All right, well, our hero checks.
Well, I mean, there's no harm in trying to see a free card, but why not take the pot down now? Obviously, this guy's just calling and then just checking, so he could have an overpair and be trapping you, but who cares? You've got the nut flush draw and an ace, so...
Yeah, I think at this point, I want to end this tournament. When I get somebody down this low, this is where I think a lot of people lose these tournaments, is that they start to play a little tentative.
Yeah, I would show.
And they need to go off with a knockout punch.
I would bet that much, and if he did anything, I would shove, or I would just, on the turn, I'm shoving.
Yeah, because it's going to get harder for you to pay it off if the flush card hits now. I mean, you have a better chance of getting...
All right, so then, when he checked to us, you're saying you would have shoved? You wouldn't have just bet?
No, I'm not saying I would shove.
I'm just asking.
I would have bet something.
I'm
not trying to slow play here and trap and hope that I catch my diamond and beat him.
Yeah, you're not going to get paid off.
I'd rather get paid off now and take the chance that I'm not going to hit.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so
I got so many outs.
We both agree that we would bet something there, and then if see what happens. But this guy checked, so now the whole hand's totally different. It's going to be hard to react, but
okay,
we checked. So what happens on the turn?
All right, so the turn, the pot remains 25,200, and the turn card is the 9 of diamonds.
Wow.
So our flush gets there, but the board pairs.
Hey, you know what? I'm turning to Mike Sexton here, but more power to him. More power to him if he makes a full house here. Or heads up. And I made enough flush, and more power to him. So no matter what he does, I'm making
very good. Bravo.
Thank you. I'm making a good bet here. So I don't know what he did yet, but no matter what he does, if he makes a boat, then we're even in chips and we keep going. So I gotta play this pretty strong.
Okay, the villain checks, and the hero in this situation checks as well.
Well, I can see why he's doing it now, because now he's hoping the guy makes two pair on
exactly.
the river.
This is why
he traps him, but... Like, he's afraid of the flush now.
Yeah.
Maybe a guy with a king with a 4 flush at the end or something. But, to be honest, just like with sets, you get make more money betting strong, your hand strong. And I would bet there.
The other thing, too, is we probably have the best hand, and almost assuredly had the best hand right now.
Yeah.
And, we had to have the best hand, right?
Well, I mean,
and,
we don't have to. The guy could have pocket sixes, pocket sevens.
Right. But you're giving him a free card to beat you.
Yeah, sure. He could have a 6 in his hand. He could have 9s and 6s, and then the river could be a 6 or a 9. Yeah. So you have to bet again. Now, that's 2 times I don't agree with checks. So you can't agree with that, right? You can't agree with another check.
No, that's what I'm saying. I mean, chances are we're not behind now. And if we are behind, it's all getting in anyhow. I would rather make him commit to this hand now, knowing that he's got all kinds of danger out there.
Yeah. I mean, I know he's probably afraid of losing him. You can't be afraid of that. You got to move on to the next hand. You're going to play so many hands to this guy. Right. You want to end it now. Just bet out and see what happens. All right, so the river?
River is the Jack of Diamonds.
Oh, that's pretty sweet. I mean, maybe he has a pretty decent 10 or King of Diamonds or Queen of Diamonds in his hand. So
Exactly.
That's a pretty sweet card. What happens?
Small blind moves all in.
Well, you're calling. I mean, it makes no difference, matter what. Yeah, and so I remember in the beginning of this hand of the week, he said, does our opponent's play make sense here? So I don't care. I mean, honestly, as a player, I am not going to sit there and mull this one over and use my time bank for this. If I lose the hand, I lose the hand, and I'm still a chip leader.
No, but he's asking about whether his opponent played this hand well. Because his opponent, and we'll go ahead and say, obviously, he beats his opponent here.
Yeah.
Wins the tournament.
Right.
So his opponent lost his tournament on this hand with a holding of...
What I think it was? Yep. It was either a 9 in his hand or like a 10 of diamonds.
Okay. Would you believe a queen of diamonds, 3 of diamonds?
Oh, wow. That's really interesting. To be that passive... With the draw to the nuts, not the nuts, but the draw to the flush, and
powerful
then
draw,
to
yeah.
make the flush, and to be afraid of not, they both checked it. Really interesting. They were both trying to trap each other, which is kind of weird. It seems
exactly. And so that was the point. It was not so much obviously, you know, our hero won the tournament and
right,
you know, checks aside, you know, had the best hand, but when you're on the other side of the coin and you're short stacked and you need to double up.
Now here's the thing, Scott. If he had done what we were going to do, he would have gotten his answer much sooner and gotten it all in way earlier.
Exactly.
And gotten his answer and not gone through the hassle of making us hear about the checks. No, but really, I think if he played it aggressively, he would have gotten paid off, obviously.
But you know, here's the thing. When I'm short stacked, I don't like to dance around. I just, when I hit something, I get it in.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. And what's this guy, does he really think that if our hero didn't have the Ace of Diamonds or the King of Diamonds, and didn't have a boat, the only way he could call is if he had a 9. And if he had a 9, wouldn't he have bet already at some point to tell you, hey, buddy, I've got at least a 9 here. I'm trying to protect my hand against the diamonds and the straight. At some point, he's going to bet. When he checks all the way down, he's not going to have 3 9s on the river. You're only going to call by a better hand by shoving there. You need to find out your information earlier. That hand should have been over way earlier than it was.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm thinking back to the opponent here. I can see the check on the flop just because I'm not sure I'm ready to put my tournament life on the line with a draw.
A draw, right. But once it gets there.
But then on the turn, I guess at that point, you're figuring you're not getting called, but it's worth a try, right?
You got to get some money out of this hand.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, otherwise you check, and then on the river you bet out and he folds, you've got nothing. At least now on the turn, this guy might have, all right, there's another card to come, maybe I can make a hand.
Yeah.
You know, or if another, maybe he has a 10 of diamonds and you've got him trapped, you know, or beaten. Man. Yeah, the slow play just almost never works.
Where's the beat?
Yeah. All right. Well, Jerry, thanks for sending that hand in, and greatpokerhands.com will send you a group of their little strategy cards. And anybody else out there want to send us a hand of the week, you can send that to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, Chris.
Yep, I would like to thank the Bard and the Magician for joining us today. It was a great show. Always great to have Faso back on. Congratulations to winning your banana. One last reminder, our final Apes event will be December 18th. It is a horse tournament, 24+2, on Full Tilt Poker. Password is antiup, all one word. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we will see you at the tables. Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
I can't hear Scott. I mean, that's not a bad thing. But.
Where's the beat?